Hi, I'm Neil, and welcome to the Crosscast. Today's show is one of the season's favourites, because we are going to preview the upcoming World Championships. And of course, we are going to give our podium predictions. But first, in today's Crosstalk, we will look back over the events in Hammer with one of my favourite sections of any CX course that we see televised. And we will cover the final round of the World Cup in Overijse, where we witness Wout winning the World Cup whilst wearing white. Oh, that's a difficult one. In today's Lasteron, we will make our World Champs predictions. Well, the fact that we've even got a World Champs is pretty good, I think. And we're also going to take a look at the 2021-2022 National Trophy Series that has been announced here in the UK. And we are also going to work out why Tim Merlier is currently Wout van Aert's best mate. I'm joined in the studio by Bruce Dalton and Matt Payne. And Bruce, you have had a full-on dumping of snow, just like me. Have you managed to get out for any slidey fun?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it was like full winter wonderland at the weekend. And you know, one of the joys of lockdown came out of that one bit of bike riding in hay. It was a nice change. The Donny Chain Gang is fantastic, and I do love riding it on the week, but it's nice to get out there in the snow and got out there and slid around. It's the closest thing to a cross course you can get at the moment, isn't it? But of course, Matt, you didn't have any your way, did you? Even though we're all relatively close here.
Yeah, I seem to be in this like freezing cold little hole that's got no snow. It's really rubbish. We did get some about 2 weeks ago, but to be honest, it's all gone and it's just icy and hard packed. So great to come off and slide down and hurt yourself on. So at the moment, yeah, lots of indoor stuff, not a lot of outdoor stuff, which is it's only slight cabin fever. I can just about talk at the end of the Donny Chain Gang on Zwift doing the broadcast for that and then coming into the crosscast. But it's been good. It's been really good to see so many cyclocross riders actually jumping on virtual world riding in the absence of any real racing. But the pictures of the snow, I am just jealous. And I know Neil's been out in it as well, I think.
Yeah, we had some really full on. I mean, it's been big dumping of snow here, more than we've had here for probably 5, maybe 10 years. So we took the opportunity to go out. We went out on the road bikes on Saturday when it was on its way, and actually it got a little bit sketchier than we'd anticipated. It was fine, but it was one of those ones where we got a bit closer to the edge than anticipated a couple of times. But yeah, really, it was really good fun. We did need to give the van a bit of manual help, actually on a main road, when it couldn't make it up a hill that you wouldn't even hardly notice on normal conditions. So yeah, we've been okay. It's been fine. But yeah, there's been a lot of slipperiness out there on the roads because of the snow. But I think we've seen a bit of slipperiness out there on some of the cross racing recently. Since last time, there's been a few national champs that have happened, some that were perhaps winners who've won them before, with Wout van Aert taking away that jersey but now coming back with it, and Sanna Kant winning her annual race win at the moment.
She's very consistent, if nothing else. You've got to hand it. I mean, you know, a lot of consistency there. If I could get that in my race results, I would be laughing about it. I'd be incredibly proud. And to be honest, you know, that's why she still deserves a contract every year. You know, even when she's not been necessarily at the very, very pointy end of the last few races. It's a show, isn't it? That consistency.
And although I make a joke about it, it's you're so right. It's so true. It's like if you could if the only race you'd ever win was the national champs, yeah, I think that's fine. You know, and particularly when you're
taking it, run
the
we
Belgians.
All would.
I know. Yeah, it's like especially when it's Belgian champs. It was one of those ones where you can't ever. We always say you can't rule her out, but particularly for that one. Did you see any of the Italian? My favourite part of that was Alice Azzufi, where she put out on the social medias, I thought it was the nicest quote I've seen this year. If this is a dream, please don't wake me up. I am Italian cyclocross champion. What a great...
It was brilliant. brilliant, wasn't it? You, the pictures, she's so proud. You can see it, and I really like the one where she's got the Italian kit. She's like, yes, this is me. I can't believe it. I've actually done this. It's just, yeah, that's what you want. It's got to mean something for people, hasn't it?
I mean, you've got to remember that with the Nationals come a lifelong time that you wear the tricolour, and in, obviously around the world, but particularly in Italy, there is an enormous prestige to have worn those bands in the same way, and they'll live on her kit forever long. So, no, I can totally understand why she'd be very proud of it. And, you know, for other nations who didn't necessarily get to host the national champs, it's, you know, there would be riders maintaining their jerseys from last year, so a little bit more time in the jersey for a full another season.
But before we start, mentioned you asked me if I've seen the Polish national champs.
Ultimate viral sensation that is the Polish bog snorkeling championships.
Yeah, I mean, my only advice to tyre selection would be ditch tyres and buy waders to anyone riding that race, because yeah, pretty infamous in a short period of time. And you know, the white and red, the winner of that jersey. Does anyone know who that was? We got so sidetracked on waist deep mud that I don't think we actually discussed the normal cross-cast test who performed best.
Well, I mean, are you surprised? It was carnage. I mean, I can't actually believe that was on a course. I really can't. I mean, how was that ever on a course? Please tell me.
So this was literally waist deep.
But I mean, if you look at UCI rules, they say minimum 3 metres wide, presumably minimum 3 metres deep at all times. So, you know, you've got to apply that all the way around the room.
Well, yeah, 3 metres deep, 3 metres wide. I suppose it's a
cue
really
boy, isn't it, all the way along?
Yeah.
So, last weekend, we had some really good stuff going on. We had Hammer, not the end of the season yet, but we had Ellie Isabeat retaining his lead in the X20, X20, Bad Cameras Trophy. I prefer to call it Bathroom Toffee, this series. So Isabeat and Brand both retained the lead in the Bathroom Toffee series. But there was some really close racing. But actually, Alvarado finished ahead of Betsema and Bakker. And Van der Poel finished ahead of Wout Van Aert and Laurence Zweig. I thought that was some really interesting strategies going on here. And this time it was so obvious about sprints for the bonuses.
Yeah. And of course, we saw a really strong ride from Zweig, which we haven't seen to the same level previously. We've had these like glimpses of really strong performances, but I thought it was really, really crafty riding. And again, like you say, using the time bonuses that come throughout the race. And it really does seem to kind of push the racing feel different, doesn't it, when even just from a visual perspective.
I do like it. I like the time bonus, the mix up, this change of format. I know I've said it before, we need races that are different, not just races that just follow the same old first over the line, the first past the post stuff. We really do want things that are different, and if we can incorporate that, like those time bonuses, I think it really does shake it up. And you could see, as Neil says, there was definitely tactics going on in those races. And I think it'll be a very sad day if we ever lose this series. And I'm just glad it's transferred from sponsor to sponsor to sponsor all the way to the Bathroom Toffee series.
I thought someone I noticed who seemed to be out-skilling other people in that race was actually Sanna Kant. She was hitting the climbs a lot better than most. She had the lines. I thought she was riding really well. You know, she was, I mean, we haven't used the word classy for a couple of shows, but yeah, she had a really classy ride.
Yeah, I think you've got to remember that course is relatively unchanged of all the courses. It's the one that stays the same the most. So Sanna, I think, can probably just do it all on muscle memory. She probably doesn't even need to pre-ride it. It's all just like, but is it like last year and the year before that and the one before that and about 15 years ago? Yeah, it is. It's pretty much the same. And because it's good, because it does have all that choice in there. But I thought it was interesting how far down we saw, you know, riders finishing there that we would have thought might have been further up. And the form book seems to be a little bit out of the window, because I would have put Lucinda Brown to be much, much further up, much closer in there on that course normally. And Madame Backer at the moment, she's on serious form and really is good in terms of pace. And Betsema, again, I mean, with what's coming up, she is showing she's, in terms of all-rounder, she is definitely one of the best.
I mean, we talk about this going into the Worlds, don't we? Every year we have this the final weekend before the Worlds. Normally it's Hooge Heide. You know, sad that we can't have it this time, but it's you know, usually it's the big show. It's the final hand, and traditionally you wouldn't have the race before the day before the World Cup on the final weekend. Usually it's just a singular day before into the World Cup. So I wondered whether, because of that, how many people were riding it because they wanted to continue the series and to make sure they were on the overall, and maybe actually people were holding their powder dry for the following day, which potentially might have had a slightly more important sort of feel to the final weekend pre-World.
I don't know. I mean, I think you've got, it depends on which series you're concentrating on. I mean, Easybeat, I think, is probably the most obvious one for that for this race. Yeah, he was there. He was a long way ahead in the timing and the overall. And he lost a little bit, but he's still 2 minutes 46 ahead of Aerts, who's in second in this series. And he didn't even race on the Sunday. He was clearly there to aim for this competition. The brand Betsema, well, this is one where it's been closed slightly. Now it's only down to 38 seconds. So that one is much, much closer. And we'll see what's going to happen over the rest of the series. The other thing we saw in that one was a lot of people crashing. There was that ditch where you saw them trying to empty it from with the water, which I think was there so that it wouldn't get even more waterlogged and kind of dig even deeper in the bottom. But there are so many people were going over the bars, sliding into it. And so you may have thought, well, of course, the safe thing to do there is to dismount early and to run it. And Jannie Vermeersch tried that, and he's had the hardest crash of the lot of them by just slipping over, landing flat on his back. It looked incredibly painful to me.
I mean, he's been riding really, really strongly, and you've got to wonder what that's going to do for his Worlds. You know, you would think he was, you know, one of the key people that you would expect to be there, and, you know, it didn't look great, did it? The fact that you were having to bail out a ditch or pump out a ditch prior to racing, surely they must have known that. Come on, guys. Really? You know, I don't want to get my high horse on my soapbox, but flipping heck. It's kind of like, it's winter, it's going to rain, it's going to be wet. Guess what? It might fill up with a little depression with water.
Yeah, agreed. I think the other thing is, it's, you saw this, you know, late January conditions where the ground really has had enough. We're proper in that, like, mid-winter sort of period. The ground does, like, have a slick coating on the top of it. And you saw it both weekend days and across the weekend where riders were, you know, they were, for a moment, take a section, oh, calm down a section, have a think, and then, oh, they lose the back end quite quickly. And I think it's just that everyone's riding the same tubs at this time in the season. Most people are pretty hot on their bike skills, but it's just that, like, that ground condition change just beforehand.
But, I mean, that pales into insignificance. I mean, proper insignificance. I think that was something much, much more controversial that I couldn't believe it, what I saw, and I don't understand how they possibly got away with it. You look at this series, it's this Bad Cameras, the Bathroom Trophy, and they've got, and you go around the course, and what do you see around the course at strategic intervals? Big yellow ducks. Those big yellow rubber ducks.
I was trying to think, what do we go around the course looking at? Lines, okay, barriers.
4 or 5 metre high ducks. And where does this course go around? A lake. Massive lake. There was no duck on the lake. And I can't believe that any sponsor would be able to tolerate the fact that you've got a big lake and no rubber duck being on the lake. And I would like to put out a plea to listeners to, if you can get away with it, and when we're allowed to go to these courses again, if we're at a course where there's a big lake and some massive rubber ducks, so do the honourable thing and allow the ducks to take a little swim. I was shocked. So I thought, this is such an opportunity that's gone to be, it's been missed.
No, let's just go in and liberate a duck. The Duck Liberation Army is going in, and we're going to liberate with these ducks from being staked down wherever it is by ropes so it doesn't blow away, and we're going to get it on that lake. I'm going to be there. I'll have my little Guy Fawkes mask on, but I am going to go liberate a duck if I go next time. In celebration.
It is a very Belgian thing to do, though, to have an enormous inflatable duck in your front garden or a sculpture. So, you know, if you just take that as a... I'm sure there'll be quite a provision in their department, no doubt.
Yeah.
Definitely, it'll be a thing. I like it.
Excellent.
Yeah,
speaking of entertaining things to witness, I have to say, if you're not watching Rebecca Farringer's previews of any of the races, she's doing it for all the races. They're you know, it's this, we have different people.
It's better than the racing.
It's absolutely hilarious.
It's much better than racing.
It's so much fun. she's been putting out some absolutely amazing videos. The final round of the World Cup saw Wout van Aert take another win, and of course the series ahead of Van der Poel, with Tom Pidcock in third. Alvarado finished on the top step for the second time in 2 days, ahead of series winner Brand and Manon Bakker after a fantastic ride and her second podium in 2 days. Now, I hope you've got a hat to hand, Matt, because I think you said something like, I'll eat my hat if Matthew van der Poel doesn't win it next time. But this time...
I have, actually. Yeah, hang on. It's a Malvern's one.
Oh, no.
Here he goes.
And cabin fever. That's pretty fair to say.
Yeah, it's pretty minging, actually. It's covered in mud. Yeah, no, I might have to save that for
so
when I put some
Marmite
on it.
Are the broken nights?
Yeah.
Are the broken nights suiting Wout van Aert, or is this something else? Is this Van der Poel easing up? Dad Watts.
I mean. Yeah.
He was
very, very fast on his feet, wasn't he? And I think in a course that involved so many tight technical dismounts, I mean, both him and Alvarado were just, they were just smooth, and smoothness on a course like that, whilst lots of people made mistakes, they made less mistakes than everyone else.
Yeah, but you look at the time gap. I mean, Wout van Aert was... We know coming into the World Champs, you can't discount it. It's that classic sort of Belgian mentality, isn't it? It's like national championships and World Championships. You know that he and Sanna are going to come into form. Just, it's going to happen. But did Matthew sit up? I mean, that time gap's over a minute between them. A minute and 3 seconds, I think. And I'm not sure Matthew didn't sit up and just take it easy a little bit. He knew he had enough of a gap. He's got a minute and four back when he finished to Tom.
But he did deck it three times on the final lap, which makes me think he messed up because he was trying too hard.
Or did he mess up because he wasn't actually concentrating and he wasn't fully on it? Because you know how easy that is. You step off the pace and you end up losing it because you're not actually full focus.
He looked miserable to me. He looked like a beaten man. I mean, Matthew, don't come at me with this, but it was in the house that I was in where someone did make the comment, I'll tell you what Matthew needs to do. He just needs to stop being rubbish, which was, compared to his normal self, he was making just all kinds of mistakes. And it's not the first time we've seen that this season. We've said it before. You know, you can count the mistakes, and it's not like him. If he's not on a good day, yeah, it's not like the Matthew of a couple of years ago, where even on the worst possible day he would still trounce everybody else. If he's not on a good day now, he can be beaten. And I think there are mind games. Well, they're not even mind games. I think there are some mind games going on, but the psychology of Van der Poel and Van Aert as we come into the World Championships, I think it's absolutely fascinating. You know, who has got the upper hand at the moment? I don't know. I think that Van Aert, he couldn't have really had a better weekend.
I was going to say, I think that it's very much, if I was a betting man, and we'll go on to our predictions in a minute, I would say that it puts a very strong psychological footing to the races for the winners of the weekend. It always does. It's the final weekend. It's the big test. It's the, actually, how far have I got to go? Because it's only recovery from here on. You can't get any fitter.
But even at Hammer, we had Van Aert chasing him down. And he was closing and closing and closing. So even if it had been the race has been the other way around, I think there still would have been doubts in Van der Poel's mind. And all it takes is that slight doubt, that slight edge that it could make a difference. We'll see what happens next weekend, though.
Did you think the course, I mean, you know, is the first time it's been there for a World Cup that I know of. Was it worthy of a World Cup?
I thought it was, actually, really? Myself. I thought there was a lot of really interesting sections on it. It had those really long power sections where it was something that would really take something out of your legs. You know, there was that the big climb, and then the cobbled climb where we had Matthew Vander, I don't pay for my carbon rims pole, you know, going up that cobble climb on his flat tire. I think there was a lot to it. I actually did really like it. I think there was technical stuff you could, and if particularly if you in the women's race, it was really much more obvious where you had different parts of the course. So you've got Brand, for example. She was very, very good on some sections and then was outskilled on other sections. So it had that variety to it where the gaps could wax and wane a huge amount. You had Kay absolutely storming up the climb on some of the, you know, so it was that controlling the power. I thought it was a really good race. It was gutting what happened at the start where we had both, I think it was both Ben Turner and Cam Mason who pulled out. Both of them nursing, recovering, hopefully recovered collarbones at the moment. So both of them went down. And it looked like Gosse van der Meer went down as well. There was just a bit of coverage where he was in the pits with a very bent bike.
I think Cam Mason ran it over.
Oh, right. Okay.
Yeah, Cam Mason ran it over. That's why the bike was trashed. I think it was Cam who rode over it. But he's definitely okay. His collarbone's okay. I haven't heard from Ben. But I think we'd have heard if he was out at this stage.
I mean, it looks to me that people are just getting sick of lockdown, haven't been able to have a cuddle, and they just wanted a bit of, you know, a bit of a close action.
I suppose
everyone's getting
a bit
lonely.
Yeah, it's the only point you're allowed to do that in these races, isn't it, actually, at the moment? So, yeah.
Exactly. They're the closest people.
Yeah, closest people in 2021 so far, really.
But yeah, I mean, all joking aside, not a fantastic one for Cam to start back going into stuff. And no doubt everyone will be licking their wounds. Never nice to crash the weekend before a Worlds. But as we know, a lot of tension rides on those last two rows of the grid, actually, and particularly on
but
a course.
On
like
the
that.
Other hand, you had Richards. there was one time she went down. Yeah, but Evie Richards, she crashed. She slipped out on that corner with the ruts in it. And I'm pretty convinced that somehow she managed to fully crash, go down, not unclip, and somehow managed to get the bike back upright again without taking her feet out of the pedals and then rode off up the hill. We think, okay, that's someone who knows how to ride a bike. I'm not quite sure how she managed it, but certainly did well on there. But of course, she was, you know, it was a bit of a ding-dong battle with her and Kay, but Kay finishing ahead of Richards.
I thought the whole course really did promote good racing. I mean, I know I asked the question, but it was a little bit tongue-in-cheek, really, because I actually think it's one of the best courses we've seen for a while in its balance across all the features. And I thought that was really nice to see. And I think the point you made, Neil, really does sum it up. Different riders were suited to different parts of that course. And you got two very different riders in Anna Kay and Evie Richards. Both are coming from mountain bike into cross. But they are physically very, very different riders and different skill sets. And you look at the two riders together and, you know, they were separated by nothing all the way around that course pretty much. But they were up there and battling in the top 10. But for me, it was a real mix. I mean, Clara Hunsinger what's she doing right the way up there? How does that work? In theory, she's more mountain bike, more tech, and yet she was clearly well at home on that course because it had a real balance of things in there. So for me, the biggest surprise was to see Bessemer so far down by the end of the race. And Voss, well, he's Voss done and dusted now.
But I think you mentioned Hunsinger. I'm not sure that we should be... you say, what's she doing up there? Well, bear in mind, her World Cup results have been... You know, where are we? Second, sixth, fourth. That she's got to be one of the most consistent riders in the World Cup this season.
She has, but she's been good. But everybody else, in theory, should be getting better now, unless they've all done too much training, or they're really training hard into that week. And that, for me, is the balance. There are people training really, really hard into that week, and other people going up or down. But, you know, you look at Manenbacher, she's just getting better and better and better and better. And if you follow that graph through where she's going, she should be on a podium. She could be in with a win, but, I, you know, she's pushed herself right up into contention because of that ride. I continue the graph upwards.
So let's enter the Laster Ronda. So since the last show, there's been what would be actually in quite a fairly early announcement by any season standards. So we've kind of had faith, and there's six key dates that have already been announced for next year's National Trophy and the National Champs. Matt, what can you tell us about the dates and the venues?
Return to some of my favourite races. That's all I'm going to say. Derby is an absolute classic. We kick off in round one in Moorways. Moorways Stadium, for me, it's a real class course. It always produces a fast race. It's traditionally been the first one of the season. And it's a cracker. It's proper cross in a proper cross venue. I think it's great. Westmoreland, Dave Haygarth, the legend. He's a living legend, that man. And he always delivers. Brilliant, brilliant course is that test everybody that are fit for the conditions. He bears in mind what the weather's doing, what the conditions are like, what people's riding experience has been. If you're going to ride one round, that would be the round to ride out of the whole lot. Because for me, Westmoreland sums up. If you want to see whether you're any good, go ride Westmoreland, ride Dave's course. Calendar Park round three. Newman, Fraser, the organiser, really excited, and the Scots always put on a good show. Don't know whether it's going to be the same as the rounds that have been using it in the Scottish series, but cracking course. Sunderland going up to the northeast. I mean, that is going to be loud. If we've got crowds by that point, you know that that's probably going to be the loudest round of the lot, because if we have even a few of our home names back, it really is a cracking venue to go up into any northeast venue, go in there and have a cross race. And you know that there's going to be volume, that even Bruce, you know, in his focused self, is still going to be able to have it butting in his ears.
Yeah, and for the northeast, those people that aren't familiar with the UK geography, that's where people like Anna Kay come from, Tom and Maine. Yeah, there's a lot more riders as well. But, you know, those two being, you know, the top, in that top group, and so it's a real heartland for producing quality and riders at the moment.
They are a product of the local scene, most definitely, and they're still attached and still in touch with the local scene, and they still coach with local kids when they go back. So for me, that's going to be absolutely amazing. A bit like when you see people like Ben Tulett down at Cyclopark. Because, of course, Ben's sort of home turf pretty much at Gravesend. Cyclopark produced a fantastic national championship, a fantastic round of the national trophy before. It's going to be interesting to see what they do with that, because there's limited options in that venue. It's quite compact. It's going to have to be subtle, the changes, I think. I don't know that they're going to put masses in there. But I think, overall, a really balanced series. Notable absentees, Yorkshire, missing for the first time in I don't know how long at the moment. And if they wanted to do one, where could they go? It's a pretty packed schedule in there. And also the Southwest, who were due to do one this year, the 2021 season, and aren't back, sadly. And I was really looking forward to going down to the Southwest, and they're not back with us.
So those are the... We will give you plenty of information about those when we come to next season. I think it's a nice mix. We're going from almost as far south as you can go in the country through to almost as far north as you can go in the country, and pretty much, you know, step it off at equal intervals from south to north, which I think is a nice spread. But even further south than Gravesend is Crawley for the national champs at the South of England Showground, 8th to 9th of January. I guess it, delete 2021 and insert 2022, same venue. And we were looking forward to it for this year, looking forward to it for next year now.
I think with Dougie in charge, Dougie Fox and the Crawley Wheelers down there, they are really progressive. From everything like cherry pickers to give you a good view in the commentary position, to changing the course, to take on board people's advice using the quarry sections. Really innovative, great thought goes into it, and they are absolute cross fanatics. There's no other way around it. And because of that, it translates into the event. And I can't tell you what Dougie's plans are, because he's sworn me to secrecy, is he, on some of the parts. But if he gets to do what he talks about, it's going to be really interesting, because there's going to be something that I don't think anybody in the UK has ridden through before.
Is it fill the quarry in with mud and just swim across it?
No.
Okay. Well, I have a lot of respect for the effort that goes on and Dougie's team. They put on a good race. I just, you know, that'll be a race with some running. If we'd have had it this year, no doubt it would have been another wet, muddy national champs. But fingers crossed all the organisers actually get to put on their events next year. My personal take, I do wonder how racing will be in September. I don't know if the vaccinations are going to... Are we going to have a vaccination? If you race, you race domestically. BC still haven't decided any of these things. I don't know. Are we going to have PCR tests on the start line? Again, something that, as a non-professional sport, maybe it changes the dynamics. But it's nice to have it on the calendar at least.
Gives us something to look forward to and hope for.
Yes, exactly.
Just coming up in the next few days, though, is the 2021 World Championships coming from Ostend. Really exciting championships. Their only downer with it is, for understandable reasons, no junior races this year. Disappointing, but there we are. That's that. At least we've got four races that are going to be contended this time. So the Ostend course, basically it's you ride on the grass, you go over a humongous bridge, you ride around the sand, come back over the bridge through the grass. And so that's really the three different parts of the course. There might be some slight differences this year. I don't know if there's going to be big differences. I'd heard that they were actually going to be trying to break up the sand, potentially with some sections that were rideable, by putting in some, I don't know how they would do it, but putting in almost like some temporary road sections in there so that you could actually ride in between sections of sand. But I haven't got it pictured in my mind. I've certainly not seen any pictures of it. I don't know if either of you have heard or seen anything about that.
Well, yeah, yes and no, because I've been studying the technical manual. I love a good map, has to be said, and a good technical manual, and having a little bit of a look at some of the details. And I think, to be honest, whatever they were going to do is going to be totally revised because of budgets and because of the lack of spectators, etc. So any plans to bring in trackway or temporary roadway, I think, have gone out the window. And certainly judging by the pictures that I've seen and the training that we've seen riders doing, no. However, it has changed a little bit from previous editions, and you've got a lot more now inside what is the horse racing track, and that's allowing them to put sand inside as well as on the beach, So if it wasn't sandy enough, you've got the internal track section as well as the section out on the beach as well, separated by the world's biggest bridge ever. It's huge.
Yeah, if ever there was a course where you could really benefit from some of Sven Nys's oversized dewgasts, this would be one, because I think a silky 37mm file tread would be perfect for what looks to be battle.
But do you need a sand tire when you're running with a bike? Doesn't matter what the tires are if you've got it on your shoulder. So I think there's going to be some. I think you could see a whole range of tires being selected. I mean, when we talk about the bridge, I expect most people will know what we're talking about here. But we're not. It's not one of these temporary structures made out of scaffolding. This is a bridge big enough to put barges through underneath it. It's around 10 to 15 seconds to ride up it at full gas. So that's, it's just obviously the same height from either side, but it's about 10 to 15 seconds, and it's a steep, and there's a steep transition. And so there are things to really look out for. Let's talk about the going up first. So going up it, of course, it's steep. It's a long, draggy climb. I think if you see riders at the back of the field on their last lap, they're probably going to be taking a full minute to get up there. It's going to be absolutely horrible. I think the...
Do you know how steep it is, Neil? It's 21%, the bridge. That's one in five. So that's a one in five climb either side to get 8 metres in height.
Incredible.
Bear in mind that you're coming off the sand, which the sand section gains 55 metres on the sand side from when you go down to the shoreline right the way back up again. So it's mental. You need a King of the Mountains point on top of that.
That's more climbing than when it's passed.
No, it's not. Nothing's got more climbing than when it's passed. I hate that. Bleep, 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 bleep.
When you're... I think coming into it from, like, the, should we say, the solid side, the mud side, yeah, it's, you're coming into a huge, huge climb. You need the speed and you need to try to get up it. It is going to be interesting to see who burn their matches up it. I think you'll see people who are lightweight really trying to get an advantage on it. But coming from the other side, from the sand, there isn't any running to it. So you are coming straight off the sand into that, would you say, Matt, 21% climb? No, so imagine remounting on a 21%, one in five gradient. You know, it's kind of like these trying to remount going up Koppenberg or something. Yeah, it's just not going to happen. So people have to remount early in the sand to try to get a little run into it. And it's so technically hard to time that right, because the reality is no one can ride the entire sand section on the beach side. I don't know what that is actually going to be like on the race. When they ran this as the Belgian national champs, they did a very naughty thing there. Actually, I think it was legal at the time to do this, but they had a different sand side for the men and the women. So I don't know what practically what it'll be like. But whatever it is, it'll just be sandy. It's not rideable for the whole side that time. So you will need to remount tactically just before. And the other thing is, you see people who are, you know, what gear are you in? Have you got opportunity to change gear? Because as you come down that huge climb at that one in five, you need to be in a gear where you are going to, you hit that sand at the bottom incredibly fast. And then you've got to be in a gear by which you can then ride through the sand. Now, if you come off early and you're not prepared, you get a forced dismount. Then when you come to the other side of the sand, you're going to be in the wrong gear to get going again. So I think the gear selection, as you come down the climb, making sure that you're in the right gear ready to get back on the climb is going to be one of those rides where if people can pay attention, if they can keep concentrating, then it could actually be quite an advantage, especially when people are getting tired on as we reach the end of the race.
Yeah, I think it's going to take that sort of persistent small details approach, because again, I don't necessarily think you're going to see major slippy crashes on a course like this. Like you say, riders probably will err on the side of grip because you're not going to be able to ride a lot of the sand, so you know, probably will be decided on long running sections and the small thing, you know, while making the little rearrangement of his pedal every time, you could, you know, if required, change on your back.
I mean, we talk about those tyres though, and we talk about the gear, but when you actually look at the numbers, the sand and improved sand sections, they are 565 metres. There's over 1,300 metres of grass, stroke mud. So the point that Neil makes is quite true. If the grass, the muddy sections are rideable, how much time are you going to make there by having a bike set up for that rather than the sand, knowing that, as Neil says, most people aren't going to run? And is that going to be the difference? I mean, you look at the pictures and you look at the training we were seeing. I mean, the only person going down to the beach on the Ineos training camp wasn't going down for an ice cream. It was Pidders going down to practice on the sand. And he was down, you know, in Spain on the training camp going to practice on the sand. But actually, it's only 500 and odd metres. There's 400 metres of bridges each lap. So there's only just less distance in bridge. And the thing that actually for me is the biggest difference is you've got some cinder track because you're going around the hippodrome, which doesn't ride like sand if you want to do granular structures. It is, yeah. It's a new sport, hippo racing. Never commentated on that. I have commentated on snail racing once. But not hippos.
Okay, you've outdone my comment. I'm not surprised.
It was really, really improvised.
But okay, while we're talking about other sports, I would, again, I've already asked listeners to help us next year when we come to Ducks and Lakes. But this time, I hope that everyone can be part of kind of a communal sound effect. When the riders, particularly on the first lap, start coming down that bridge into the sand, first lap, there'll be a straight on camera shot. I want everyone across the whole country, the whole world, just to go, oh, and then, hey, as soon as the first person comes off on the sand, hopefully, yeah.
Yeah, because it comes proper.
watching it last time, it's, you've got every type of crash. You know, people going over the back, over the front, side to side, roly polies, the full works. It's tricky. Let's put it that way. So, okay, so we're talking about how to set the bikes up and which bits. One of the things that we sometimes talk through, and I've had a look at this race here. I was coming back to the big bridge. When it comes to the end of the race, if there's bunches at the end, where do you need to be ahead to win? I don't know if you've kind of tracked it back. I've done some tracking back on this, and I reckon it's actually on the big bridge. Now, if you're not at the front of any group you're with, you're going to be out of time. Because I think you come down that bridge, and then there's a lot of course left after that bridge, but it's all really fast. And you go past the pits. There are some places, but you're not going to move from the back of a bunch of four or five to the front in that space. So I think we can expect to see people trying to attack in that on that last lap. And then if there's still that little bridge that they've had previously, I'm not sure it's going to be there, with steps on it before the finish. Again, another key point where if you've got fast legs running up those steps, there is a bit more of an opportunity there. But even there, which side do you run up the steps? Again, one for the thinker. Have a look at that and see what lines people take as they come off that set of steps, because you've got to run them. You know, this is a full-on bridge. If you come up one side, you're forced into one line, another side, another line. And you could even go kind of tack across as you're going up that set of steps. And I think that could actually be decisive for the order that people come off it before they come into the finish. So I think you could, if it's ones and twos, if you're on your own, it's going to be a bit different. But I think if there are bunches together, there could be some really early attacks going if they've thought about where do they need to go before they get to the finish.
You see, I've got a different take on it altogether here, because I don't think the bridge is going to be that decisive on the way back into the finish, because I just think it's too far out. And I'm really looking forward to see whether you're right or not, Neil, but I actually think it's too far away, because you've got a section down past the pit. You've got to come all the way back round on another cinder track straight. You then got a very wavy section. You've got the little bridges. You've got the turns. And then that long right-hander that opens out. It doesn't tighten. It opens into the finish. And for me, a rider like Anna Kay, who we've seen making places every single corner, if it's tight, she can dive underneath. Pidcock, the same. Those two riders have been able to take places for fun on those tight corners, and I think there's enough of them left when you come over the bridge into the finish. So I actually think it could prove really exciting if it comes as a bunch. My gut feel is it won't be like that. My gut feel is it's going to be too hard, and it will be ones and twos all the way through the field.
I definitely would agree with you on that. I think that even if we don't presume that every single section of sand is unrideable and there's a lot of running, we rarely see really big bunches in races that have lots of running in, because unless you are a world-class runner, even off the bike, you won't be able to split a group, and people can't run at other people's paces, generally speaking. It's exactly the reason why we've seen such strong performances from Watt recently, and Alvarado as well, you know, really just fast on your feet. And I think it will be an event that will probably come down to really, really fast footwork.
Yeah. So let's move on to the most important thing of the day, our predictions. So first of all, you can join in at home, and there's going to be a link on the Facebook page. There should be a link in the notes that come along with the show. So you can join in as well, and we can then have a league table at the end to see who's the best at predicting. So the rules are as follows. You're going to choose the 1, 2, and 3 for all categories. If you get the winner right, you get 3 points. If you get the second place right, you get 2 points. If you get third place right, you get 1 point. But if you choose someone who finishes on the podium, you'll get at least 1 point.
So all the right people, but in all the wrong order, would be 3 points.
So 3 points winner in the right place.
I was crap at maths at school.
2 points for second. So the maximum you could get is 6 points. And then we're going to say who we think are going to be the best Brit as well, as we go through. So first...
Thanks, Neil.
Well, some of the categories are a lot easier than others, I have to say, for best Brit. Okay, under 23 women. Let's start there. Who's going to go first? Matt, you're on my screen on the call, so you're going for the under 23 women.
Right. Under 23 women. Do you know, I hate this game. I think we are going to see the under 23s. Number one is going to be, let's go with Blankovas. Katjev Blankovas. Number one. Number two is going to be Van der Heijden. And number three is going to be Bakker, I think.
Okay, Bruce. And then whilst we've done them all, we can talk about why.
I was going to go number one for Bakker. I think number two, Hunsinger. And number three, Van Heijden. Do I have to give reasoning for my working out, or is there a separate
box? Not yet. I'm going to have faith. I'm going number one, K. Fast feet, K. I'm going number two, on the rise, Bakker. Number three, amazing on the sand, Peters. Puck Peters. Youngest rider, probably, of the lot of them. And first British rider. Obviously, mine is K, but for the two of you.
For me, K. I think she'll be agonisingly close to the podium.
Interesting that Matt is the only one that's chosen Blanka Kachavas. She's clearly been very, very good this season, but I think the sand isn't gonna play to her strengths, and I think her strengths are not as strong as perhaps they were a few weeks ago. Whereas I mean, we all chose Bakker, and one of us is going to get maximum points for Bakker because we've had her in 1, 2, and 3.
Yeah.
If she's up there, I'd like to see Van der Heijden do well. I think she's had a season that she'd rather forget, but she pulls it out on the big days. And I think Hattie's power and her good running will see her potentially just above Anna. I know I said it was tactical, which it is to a degree, but I do think Hattie could be well in there. I think the two of them could be fighting side by side. And I think that could be one of the closest finishes, I think, on the way through.
Yeah. Bruce, I don't know if you want to change your selection here based on this, but I think that Honsinger is actually racing elites. I'm not, the list isn't...
Well, I'd like her to ride in the appropriate category. I've selected the right age category of ride.
What you said, Bruce, earlier was you said you think Kay is going to be agonisingly close to the podium. So should we be really kind on you? Say if Honsinger is actually racing in the elites, then we'll shift them up.
Right, okay. Hang on. No, just double checking the start sheet rather than the entries.
Yeah.
And on the start sheet rather than the entries, there is no Clara Honsinger. But, you know, like when you've given your answer, you can't change it.
So I'm still barred because of my lack of
preparation.
Yeah, exactly.
Not that I'm competitive, Bruce, now that you've opened your mouth and said it.
No. Okay. All right. So let's move on to the under 23 men. I'll go first for this time. Let's say Kamp first, Van den Bosch for second, and again, keep the faith, Maine in at third. Matt, you're huffing and puffing.
I am a lot. I think it's a good selection, I have to say. I don't want to do the same. I'm now going to have to do a little rethink.
Okay, Bruce, what about you then?
I'm going to go with Kamp. I'm going to put Tomer up one because I think he will be storming. And I think Timo Kielisch will be third.
Yeah, it was on my shortlist, I have to say. Good move. Matt, have you come up with yours yet?
No.
Okay, hang on, no points.
No point. Okay, I have come up. Yeah, okay, right, let's go. So, I think, I have to say, Ryan Kamp for the win. Pim Ronhart in second, and then, shall we go wild card here and go Ben Chulett? Why not?
Oh,
going to go
nice.
Really wild card. Yeah.
Oh well, he's already.
I thought you were going to choose a rider from a different category like me, Matt.
Well, don't tempt me. I've got more chance to be a rider.
Chulett does already have a few of the jerseys, so he knows how to ride well on the day, doesn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's a total wild card. He might not even start yet. So.
Yeah. Well, between us, we've embedded our best Brit in our selections. Okay, next one on my list moving across is the elite women's category. Whose turn does it go first? Bruce, you first this time.
I feel like I've got a really predictable one, but I always lose these ones, so I'm going with it. Okay, I've got Celine, Lucinda Prand, and then this one, again, this is where I feel like I'm shooting myself in the foot potentially because I...
You're going to go for Honsinger again?
I'd hope it to be Evie.
Not going to go for Honsinger again?
No, I'm just going to go for the... Yeah, I'm just going to keep picking her for all the categories. I'm going to go for Richards, yeah, that's right.
Shall I go next? Okay, so going for the... win, I think I am going to go for Brand, followed by Hunsinger. And then I'm going to follow this up.
Again.
Hunsinger in second, yep. And then I am going to go... I'm so torn between who to go for next, but I think I'm going to go for... Do I really want to do this?
Do it. Yes.
I think it's going to be... I'm just actually just double checking. It's not who I think it... I was going to say it's going to be Betsema, but she's not on the start list. Which absolutely threw me out, which means I'm going to go for Saline in third.
Not on the start list. That's not the official start list, surely. Because she was announced.
Just have a double check.
I hope she hasn't gone back to that old chemist.
I was just about to say that.
I'll go for Betsema in third. I'm going for Betsema in third. And Saline not in the medals. Because that was my original pick.
Okay. And I presume Richards is your best pick. Or are you going to choose someone from another category?
Or a country.
Notwithstanding the rumours that Betsema isn't on the start list, I was actually going to go for Betsema. Betsema for the win. Betsema for the win. Alvarado in second. And Brand in third. Although I have to say, Matt, when you said Alvarado not on the podium, I thought, yeah, you know what? I could see that happening too. So I'm going for Betsema, Alvarado, Brand for the elite women there. So between us, we've got, how many have we got? Four different riders in there. So not a huge amount. No Kant. So we have no one's done the ABC of Alvarado, Brand and Kant. So... Yeah, she could. I, to be honest, I was thinking with Kant, the fact that she is racing at home, she's also racing in the sand. She's always good when it comes to when it comes to the world champs. I think I really wouldn't put it past her to podium. I mean, you know.
No, I think it's probably the widest open category of all. And you look down the list of riders who are going well, and like we said earlier, it's most of the top 30 could realistically be there. Yeah. You know,
Castellane, and for the first amazing. Time, for the first time in a long time, I would be really surprised if Voss is close. I think she will be a long way down. I've seen nothing that to convince me otherwise. Verst, she's kind of dropped back as we've gone through the season. So, yeah, I'm fairly content with my selection there. So let's finish up then with the elite men.
Go on. Okay, I'm going to go from the top. I'm going to go Van der Poel, followed by Van Aert. Followed by Pidcock.
Okay. Van der Poel, Van Aert, Pidcock. Right there, Bruce.
Yep.
It's Fast Feet. Wow. Followed by Angry Faced Matcha. And then Lil Tom in the background, like the feet artist on a record. Unfortunately, I would say.
Tom's got lots of years. He's got a lot of time to get there. And I think it's only a matter of time before he's there. I just don't think he's quite got that last couple of percent. Not this season. Maybe next. I mean, it could literally be next season, but he's so close. But
okay. For me, it's Van Aert to win. Second place, Pidcock.
You're making me doubt myself now.
Pidcock in second.
No.
And do you want to guess who I originally had in third? and who I have now got in third.
Yes.
Clara Hunsinger.
Keeping the faith.
stick on the trend.
You bump it.
I was going to have Spake in third.
Oh man, enough of the man love.
But I've gone to Vanderpoel.
You two need to get a room.
Vanderpoel.
Yeah.
I've gone for third. So actually, we've all got the same three riders.
In a different one order. Of us,
in a different order. One of us is going to get a point somewhere or other. I hope. I mean, maybe none of us will. Maybe it really will be Lars van der Haar ahead of Svake, ahead of Aerts. And so with that, we will finish up Argosy, the checkered flag ahead. Now, remember, you can join in as well. So go on to the Facebook page, have a look at the notes on here. And I'm feeling I can even do this as a QR code. So you can scan it with your phone and it should come up on your phone and you can come in, share it with everyone you've ever met, and see if we can get a nice, decent size league. So do join in with the fun and see what we can do, how good your predictions are. Do hope that you're all going to really enjoy watching the Worlds this year. It looks like it could be a really interesting one. I think the course is a bit more tried and tested than some of them we've seen in recent years. And we'll catch up with you next time. In between now and then, you can catch us on the internet. You can find me at Crosscast Neil. Bruce, where can we find you?
You can find me at Bruce Dalton CX. And where can we find you, Matt?
At Matt Fixer Pain on every social media I can be bothered getting in touch with.
So until next time, we'll see you on the other side of the tape. Bye.